Hey guys, welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. It's libertarian foreign policy, mostly. Although, quite a bit about the cops, too, I guess. Same thing, it's the war at home. Alright. Today on the show, we'll have Ramzi Baroud on to talk about Israel-Palestine. And I'm working on a couple of others, but I don't know if they're going to work out. I'd like to speak with our friend Brendan O'Neill from Spiked. Because he's just the right kind of political weirdo for me. I disagree with him on some things, but I still sure like the guy. He's some kind of a libertarian Marxist type, but he absolutely hates the sanctimonious do-gooder warmonger liberal types. Not so good on Israel-Palestine, as we found out last summer. Surprisingly to me. And his article on the cartoon thing, I was a bit surprisingly disappointed by it. I agree with everything in it, but I expected so much more. But I would like very much to get Brennan on the show and talk about it today. Although, he can very rarely ever do it on short notice, I think. So maybe that'll be tomorrow. And then trying to get Eric Margolies, the great. Trying also to get, who is the other? John Neffel. I haven't talked with him since forever, but he wrote this great thing for Rolling Stone, and it's doubtful I will be able to get him on such short notice. But I've got a friend working on Brendan O'Neill there. He's now talked to the guys at the Spiked office, and they're hunting him down for me. Let's see what happens there. Ooh, I'm anxiously anticipating the incoming instant message from Eric Garris here. It says, Eric Garris, oh, he's stopped typing. He was typing, now he stopped typing. All right. See, that's the number I did call, and it just didn't work for me. All right. Anyway, so I'm trying to get Brendan O'Neill, so here's the thing. I got to talk about the cops today. I have so many stories about the American police state. I've really got to cover them. I got Israel-Palestine news. But I guess I want to get what I have to say about the France terrorist attack thing out of the way. I got to admit that it isn't like I wrote all this down or I've really thought this through very well or anything. I haven't even had the time really to sit and collect my thoughts so much. I wisely stayed off Twitter yesterday mostly about this because I want to know what the hell I was trying to say first. This morning I ended up getting into it anyway because a New York Times reporter tweeted out this article by George Packer at the New Yorker about how, this is all Islam's fault. Just like it's the same ideology, he said, that was at play when the Ayatollah denounced Salman Rushdie and called for a fatwa, a death sentence against Salman Rushdie back 40 years ago, 35 years ago. But really? What? Just because Islam? I mean, there are all kinds of people who are intolerant of free speech in America who aren't Islamic at all, right? We don't chalk up their intolerance to Islam. But anytime anybody is intolerant about free speech about Islam, it gets chalked up straight to Islam itself, not any other thing, right? Like there are Christians in America who completely freak out if you say happy holidays. You hate Christmas. You're trying to nerd. And would pass a law against it if they could. And of course, they're the very same ones who are the first to stick up for free speech as long as it's smearing Muslims. But you would never see Fox News, rallying around the right of people to mock and humiliate Jews. Or Christians, for that matter. MSNBC, Christians, yes, Jews, no. Go down the list. Anyway, the thing of it is this. The guys who did this, obviously, they targeted this place, these cartoonists, for the cartoons that they were drawing. But that's not the end of the sentence. That's not the whole thing, because this isn't a vacuum. And Juan Cole, who I pretty much don't like ever since he was for the Libya war back in 2011, he wrote a great thing saying, look, let's take for argument's sake that these guys are Al-Qaeda, or they're working on behalf of Al-Qaeda, which I think is probably the most likely answer. He says, look, this is a tactic. What they're trying to do is drive a wedge between white non-Muslim Frenchmen and the Muslims. This is, with terrorism, the action is in the reaction. So it would be just foolish for anyone to think that this thing is just in and of itself just revenge against these people for the hated cartoons. Obviously, the cartoons were a big part of how they got picked as a target. I'm not saying that. But for every liberal and every journalist on Twitter to pretend that this is all just about free speech and not at all about the global Islamist insurgency against the American empire and its allies is, we ignore that truth at our own peril, as Ron Paul might say. The truth of it is, as we already know, the two who are most wanted in this case tried to go and fight in the Iraq War. Back in 2005, radicalized over the photos of the Abu Ghraib prison. For all those who are saying, oh no, we have to torture, it keeps us safe, Well, tell that to all the dead people from yesterday who were murdered by people who joined up the jihad in reaction to the American torture regime. Now, I've been arguing with these ridiculous, I guess, conservatives. This one guy took over from the New Yorker, the New York Times reporter, who for some reason bugged out after I contradicted him with facts. But they're trying to just say, well, no, this is all about just Islam mandates a hatred of cartoonists and freedom and moderation and the Enlightenment and whatever. And so that's all we need to know. And then when I say, well, it says here that they were radicalized by the Iraq War and the torture during the Iraq War. Oh, well, you're denying their agency. You're saying it's all Bush's fault. You're saying that these human beings are just electrons radicalized by events and this and that. Well, of course, first of all, that's not at all what I'm saying. Individuals, of course, are responsible for their own actions. And they could have just as easily chose not to kill anyone. They could have just as easily chosen to try to attack a French military base or something like that. And instead, they attacked a bunch of cartoonists, which makes them horrible murderers. If they were Texans, they would be getting the death penalty for murder. Nobody's saying that. But of course, isn't it denying them agency to say, oh, no, it's all about Islam? This is just what Islam makes people do. Or that's only if someone says, no, there are earthly political reasons that someone would do a thing. In that case, you're excusing them. You're apologizing for them. You're letting them off the hook. Oh, no, but if they did it because they've chosen to believe in a religion I disapprove of, well, in that case, no, that's perfectly consistent with blaming them, right? I'm reminded of Homer Simpson saying, but Marge, liquor's drunkened me. Whatever. You drank, you're responsible for what you did while you're drunk, even if it's something you wouldn't have done while you're drunk. If you believe in Islam and you did something under the influence of Islam, or you hate George Bush for torturing people to death and you murder innocent people out of motivation of hating George Bush for torturing people to death, you're still responsible for your own behavior. Nobody explaining a context here, or not me anyway, and I doubt anyone else that you hear talking like me is trying to explain away their behavior. They're trying to explain it. Look at Faisal Shahzad. America had never been attacked by a Pakistani ever before. The only Pakistani who's ever attacked America, you know, in a war, I'm not saying in a crime, was Faisal Shahzad. And he was an American citizen, naturalized American citizen with a six-figure salary, a big house, and a wife, and an education. He went home. He saw drone strikes affecting people in his grandparents' hometown. He joined up the war on their side. He got no more extreme in his Islamic beliefs before he tried to blow up the Times Square. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe.
Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. And yeah, I do think that these guys probably were Al-Qaeda guys. They're Frenchmen. As we heard yesterday, they supposedly were speaking perfect French. And now we know at least who the alleged perpetrators were. According to the French police, they are French-born of Algerian descent, radicalized by the war in Iraq and the torture photos in 2004 and 5. And according to the French police now, these guys just got back from Syria last summer, where they were fighting the war on the side of the jihad. That is to say, on America's side, on Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Turkey and Israel's side against Bashar al-Assad. And now the chutzpah of Jeffrey Goldberg to write this article about Europe under siege, Muslims everywhere. Just look at the shooting last spring at the Jewish Museum in Brussels. Now the place is surrounded by bodyguards and metal detectors and all this. He was there last Tuesday, and it's Europe's future. It's a glimpse of Europe's future. Entering the museum is a bit like breaking into a prison, he says. Why? Rabid Muslims everywhere. Oh, they just hate it when you disagree with them so much, those Muslims. And yet, here's Jeffrey Goldberg advising Obama that it would seem to me that one way to weaken and further isolate Iran is to remove or to help remove Iran's only Arab ally, Syria. That's from 2012 in The Atlantic, Jeffrey Goldberg's interview of the president. Can you just talk about Syria as a strategic issue? Talk about it as a humanitarian issue as well. Yeah. But it would seem to me that one way to weaken and further isolate Iran is to remove or help remove Iran's only Arab ally. President Obama agrees with Jeffrey Goldberg. Absolutely. And Goldberg says, so then the question is, what else can this administration be doing? And Obama says, well, there's no doubt Iran is much weaker than it was a year, 2 years, 3 years ago. The Arab Spring represents a strategic defeat for Iran, which I don't see how that's the case. But more directly, he says, because freedom of speech and assembly makes them look bad. Yeah, well, just wait around till the 2013 coup in Egypt. But anyway, but more directly, Obama says it is now engulfing Syria, and Syria is basically Iran's only true ally in the region. And it is our estimation that Assad's days are numbered. It's not a matter of if, but when. Now, can we accelerate that? This is Obama addressing Jeffrey Goldberg. We're working with the world community to do that. It's complicated by the fact that Syria is much bigger, more sophisticated, and more complicated than Libya, for example. The opposition is hugely splintered, and although there's unanimity within the Arab world at this point, internationally, countries like Russia are still blocking potential UN mandates or actions. And so what we're trying to do, and the Secretary of State just came back from helping lead the Friends of Syria group in Tunisia, is to try to come up with a series of strategies that can provide humanitarian relief. But they can also accelerate a transition to a peaceful and stable and representative Syrian government. If that happens, it will be a profound loss for Iran. And then Goldberg asks, is there anything you could do to move it faster? And Obama says, well, nothing I can tell you because your clearance isn't good enough. Ha ha ha. Right? I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you. Okay, so this is Obama in 2012. And this is Jeffrey Goldberg, who's clearly, they both obviously agree this is the entire consensus from 2011 at least through last June, and it's only slowly melting away now. It's too hard for them to make an abrupt about face. Is that America is on the side of the Sunni-based insurgency. The same bad guys from the Iraq war became the good guys in Libya and in Syria. Why? Because that's what Israel and Saudi and Turkey want, because they hate the Ba'athist, Shiite, Alawite government of Syria, Bashar al-Assad, the Iranian ally. And so that was the strategy. And it's in that context that the Jabhat al-Nusra, which is al-Qaeda in Syria, and ISIS grew into being. ISIS was really the more Iraqi-dominated faction of the same group, whereas al-Nusra are basically the Syrian veterans of al-Qaeda in Iraq who went and fought in the last war against the American occupation when America was fighting on behalf of the Iranians and their sock puppet parties. And so here we still fight on the side of the Iranians and their sock puppets in Iraq, but we fight on the side of the Mujahideen in Syria. And I mean, here's a story from Roy Gutman and McClatchy from 2 days ago. U.S. and Turkey agree to Syrian rebel training, but not whom they'll fight. So they're still on the side of, yes, we have to train up rebels, the Sunni-based insurgents, the ones who are de facto, at least, allies in the war against Assad with al-Qaeda and al-Nusra. And if you think, yeah, Scott Horton, but you hate these people, all of them, and you're a libertarian and you have such a contrary point of view, and the truth is they're only just backing the moderates, and that's not the same as, you know, committing high treason on behalf of al-Qaeda and ISIS this whole time, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here's Hillary Clinton in March of 2012 defending herself for why hasn't the government done enough to back the Sunni-based insurgency in Syria by saying, well, you know, it's kind of hard because if we do back the Sunni-based insurgency in Syria, in effect, we would be backing al-Qaeda in Syria, she says. Listen with your ears.
We know al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting al-Qaeda in Syria? Hamas is now supporting the opposition. Are we supporting Hamas in Syria? So I think, Wyatt, you know, despite the great pleas that we hear from those people who are being ruthlessly assaulted by Assad, if you're a military planner or if you're a secretary of state and you're trying to figure out, do you have the elements of an opposition that is actually viable? We don't see that.
Right. That's it. You can look it up for yourself. Hillary Clinton, Syria, rebels, March 2012, CBS News. Okay. You look it up. You can watch her say those things as you listen to her say those things. So, now, I am not one to say that America should have allied with Assad against these guys. I think it was wrong for Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and Barack Obama to pay Assad to torture and kill Mujahideen for us ever since the 1990s. I do not agree with that policy. But to back a Mujahideen war against him this whole time, when Hillary herself acknowledges at least 1 year into it that she is on the side of our enemy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. And then to pretend like we're just supposed to ignore the Iraq war and Syria war's role in the attack on the French cartoonists and consider this only an attack by Islam against free speech? Come on. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show.
Well, I'm sorry, I can't reach Ramsey Baroud. That'll happen later in the show today, I'm pretty darn sure. We've got some Israel-Palestine to talk about with him. Now, I'm sorry, I wasn't looking at the chat room. My head was pointed the other way. There's a discussion of Islam to be had here, too. And so for my part of it, I will
say this. But yeah, this is a whole other set of things I wanted to say anyway. I'm an atheist. To me, all religion is just superstition. No offense. And that's really the point. No offense. What I believe in is liberty. And first and foremost on that list is you own your own mind. You are your own mind before you're even your body or at the same time or some kind of thing. The same degree to which you own your body, you are your mind. So I don't even know if you can own your mind. If you are your mind, you like Uber own it. You're above owning it. It's yours. You can have faith in whatever you want. It'll never offend me for whatever religion you have. And, you know, honestly, I identify with people who have a grudge against religion because I remember being 14. And I guess if you were raised really religious and now you're anti, that makes more sense. But for me, you know, I wasn't really raised religious, wasn't really forced on me or anything like that other than just strangers harassing me and trying to threaten me with hell when they would see me out skateboarding somewhere or whatever. But for the most part, I didn't have much to backlash against. And I'm just kind of over it because, you know, churches are voluntary organizations, man. And if people want to leave their organized religion, they are free to do so in the United States of America anyway. And so it ain't my hobby horse. And I do tend to think that most preachers are just businessmen and that it's a pretty cynical business to be in. But, you know, I don't know that about your minister or whatever, priest or whoever you pay attention to. And so I ain't accusing him. And you're a grown up. And so you can decide for yourself, for your own family, what you think about that kind of thing. And so it always kind of annoys me, though, when you have Bill Maher and the Bill Maherists. I know there are quite a few of them who are the kind of militant atheists. Like, I don't know. You know, again, I agree with them, and I do think humanity would be better off without beliefs in these old religions, ultimately. But I just think it's just not the highest thing on my list as far as priorities. But that's because of the empire. And that's because, really, if you think about the counterfactual here, where, say, I don't know, Ron Paul was elected in 1988, and when the Soviet Union fell apart, it was on his watch, and so NATO and the American Empire fell apart as well. And then Harry Brown, you know, got elected in 96 after Ron's two terms were over, and then, you know, counterfactual libertarian world. I'd be happy to beat Muslim societies of real humans. I don't mean the religion. I'd be happy to beat Muslims, not Islam, but Muslims, in certain societies in the world over the head all day long about their religious intolerance. I'm raised this way. When I hear a story of somebody sentenced to death for converting to Christianity, I just think, man, there's no rock, you know, big enough to throw at the people who would do that to somebody. What the hell is it to you what somebody else wants to believe in? It's crazy. And I would sound like Bill Maher. I would sound like the most militant, neoconservative, atheist, and my single issue would be free speech. And why not? Talking bad about Muhammad all day long just to prove a point that it's okay to. If it wasn't for the empire, if it didn't make this all adding insult to injury, if it wasn't for the fact that just by fact of my birth and geography and whatever, I'm this 1/300,000,000th responsible, supposedly, for the actions of my government, which slaughters Muslims every day from morning till night, every day for more than for 14 years on end now. Well, for longer than that. Kills these guys endlessly. And at the time of the September 11th attack, let's say September 12th, September 13th, before war was declared on the world, the whole world was with us. It was the worst thing anybody could have ever done, and they had a million-man candlelight vigil in Tehran. I don't know if it was a million, but it was hundreds of thousands of people. Literally. No, really. Hundreds of
thousands of people came out in downtown Tehran, the capital of Iran, and did a candlelight vigil for the Americans. In Palestine, people were on their knees crying about it. And never mind old footage of somebody's birthday party that you saw where it was supposedly Palestinians celebrating. People all over the world. The French said, we're all Americans now, after they had been the most critical of the American hyperpower, as they called it, and all of that kind of thing. America had so much goodwill after September 11th. If what our government wanted to do was hunt down this tiny band of pirates and hold them to account while letting the rest of the world off the hook. And while then, again, with the Harry Brown counterfactual going on endless rant about the Statue of Liberty and what it means to try to live up to the ideals that America was founded on, and how we're not an empire. Jeez, we were only trying to protect you from the Reds, but you're right. Now that they're gone, we don't have any business in the Middle East. You guys will sell your oil anyway, blah, 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 blah. At that time, the bin Ladenites in the Middle East were the insane, homeless lunatic ranting on the street corner. They were there, but they weren't calling shots. We have insane, ranting neocons in our think tanks. They weren't calling the shots either. But when things blow up, people get radical and people start listening to demagogues who already seem to have a narrative ready to roll. That documentary, The Power of Nightmares, is brilliant on this, in showing the exact parallel of Al-Qaeda and the neoconservatives and how bad these guys need each other to make each other seem right. And the neocons took the attitude that, oh, you want an empire, huh? We'll show you empire, thinking that they're so tough that this will all be fine. When Bush used Al-Qaeda as the excuse as to go on his diversion into Iraq, the thinking was, what's Al-Qaeda anyway? Scott Horton's right. They're just a few dozen guys. They're a stateless band of nobody pirates in exile on the Duran Line. And they're ultimately susceptible to being killed, to being kidnapped and ransomed. Bin Laden was just a useful face on a poster to try to confuse you and make you think Saddam was his friend. That was all Al-Qaeda was to the Bush administration in 2002 and 2003. But now look what they did. Just like Mubarak predicted, America's sock puppet fascist dictator, and his sock puppetude being part of the motivation for the 9/11 attack in the first place, of course, he warned us. He said, if you invade Iraq, you will create 10,000 bin Ladens. And he was exactly right. So where they fought the war really for the Iranians, because Ahmed Chalabi was working for the Ayatollah Khamenei, and he fooled the pro-Israeli neoconservatives in the American government into thinking a regime change against Saddam Hussein would be in Israeli interest, when in fact it was in Iran's primary interest. What they did, though, was the Shiites, the Iranian-backed Shiite parties, they didn't want the whole country. They only wanted Shiistan. And they basically just cut the Sunnis loose. And it's the Anbar province and the Sunni triangle below, you know, south of Baghdad, and then all the way up to Mosul in the northwest, and to the Syrian border. That's Iraqi Sunnistan, where they have the least amount of developed oil resources, and their minority dictatorship was overthrown, and that population was left with nothing. And that was why they fought from 2003 and through today, and it is how that entire part of Iraq became Iraqi Jihadistan. Now the Islamic State, and Mubarak was only wrong when he said 10,000. He meant to say 100,000 bin Ladens because of American foreign policy. So I'd be happy to bash religious extremism all day, but that's not the kind of extremism that's causing the problem right now, or it's caused really by ours first. Hey, all, Scott here for Liberty.me, the brand new social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features nightly classes, guides, events, publishing, and so much more. Sign up now and you get the first 30 days free. And if you click through the link in the right margin at scotthorton.org or use the promo code Scott when you sign up, you'll save $5 per month for life. That's more than a third off the regular price. And hey, once you sign up, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and it's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Well, so Brendan O'Neill can't do it, and I can't reach Ramsey, and I can't reach Eric. And There may or may not be any guests on the show today, but that's all right, because I got some things I want to get off of my chest anyway. Let's talk about Tamir Rice. The full footage has come out now of the cops beating up Tamir Rice's sister. I'm sorry, let me rewind. Tamir Rice is a 12-year-old boy who was murdered by a cop. He had a toy gun. The cops, after they murdered him, they lied about it and said, oh, he had threatened them. He pulled it on them. They warned him 3 times, drop the gun, but he just wouldn't drop it. He pointed right at me. I had no choice. But then the video came out and proves that's not true. The cop just jumped out of the car and shot him. And then the video also shows, and I guess the lawyers had said this, but now the video is public. The video shows the cops just stand there and let the 12-year-old bleed as best they can. It's only because an FBI agent happened to be in the neighborhood, I guess, and heard the radio call and came over. He began to attempt to apply first aid to the boy, the 12-year-old boy, until the paramedics showed up. So if you want to say that, oh, well, geez, the cop just really screwed up, so it's only manslaughter one, that's fine. But laying there and refusing to administer first aid, that's a crime too. And in this case, it seemed to me a conspiracy to attempt to murder this boy by a second cause, by depriving him, not just failing to render aid, but by denying him aid. The cops were trying to see to it that the 12-year-old boy they shot would die. And he did. He's dead. The video also shows his 14-year-old sister run over there. The cops grab her, slam her on the ground, beat the crap out of her. Well, I don't know how hard they punch her, but they manhandle the hell out of her, a 14-year-old girl, handcuff her, and then throw her in the back of the cop car so she can watch helplessly through the window as her little brother lays there dying and can't even try to comfort him. And this is in Cleveland, Ohio, where you just had, I don't know, 20,000 or more citizens marching in a giant parade for the police. Now, the story of Mike Brown's aggression against Darren Wilson is complete crap. And if you believe it, it's because you're stupid, you stupid idiot. But anyway, at least there's an entire giant narrative there for stupid idiots to believe about how Mike Brown had it coming. Oh, he was 6'4". He was a big, scary black guy. Just the very same kind of big, scary black guy that I'm scared of, too. What would I do if I was that cop? I guess I'd kill him, people say to themselves. But Tamir Rice was a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun, and that means that half of this society was at one time Tamir Rice. Right? Which males among you never played toy guns when you were a kid? Did you have to take into account that the cops might kill you? And they say, oh, well, we thought he was 20. Yeah, black people look a lot taller to white people. Okay, so what? He thought he was 20. It's an open carry state, man. Did you ask him if he had a license for that thing before you killed him? Did you clarify, hey, that pistol's supposed to be worn on your hip, not under your shirt, young man? What the hell is this? France or something? This is America, where, yes, even black men have a right, a natural human right, recognized, presumably, by their government to bear arms so that they can defend their life if they choose to, or the life of any innocent people nearby them. In any immediate and proportionate response. You see, because that's what it means to be a free human being, see? But anyway, it's not St. Louis, where at least a giant percentage of the population can pretend that it's debatable
whether the guy had it coming or not. This is a 12-year-old boy with a toy gun and a trigger-happy cop who killed him, and then they stood around and let him bleed out as best they could before the ambulance got there. And it's in Cleveland, more than in any other town, where you have had the biggest pro-police response. I mean, go look at the picture of this parade down there, Main Street, up there, whatever they call it, and weep. Americans got Stockholm Syndrome back. Well, no, that's not really true, because it ain't the poor and the black in that parade. It's the rich and the white. But I don't know. I guess that's part of just being a libertarian. If you're looking, if I'm looking for an us and them, it's us civilians, and them is the government and its agents. There is no we the people. It's them, the government, and we the people. So, in other words, I am Tamir Rice, not the cop that shot him. Even if I am a white boy with an English surname from Northwest Austin, Texas. I'm the poor black kid with the toy gun, not the white cop that killed him. And I just can't understand for the life of me how people get that twisted. You're on the side of the cops? You're on the side of the cops? How? How? Go to Reason and look at these murderers stand there praying that Tamir Rice will bleed out and die right there on the spot before he can make a statement. A 12-year-old boy. What would you do? You have a nephew that's 12 years old, a son that's 12 years old. What would you do if the cops murdered your 12-year-old boy and then said, hey, he was asking for it. He was an N-word and he had a toy gun and whatever excuse and skated scot-free. 2 weeks paid vacation, sovereign immunity, case dismissed. Case never entered into the record. You take the side of the cop that murdered your kin? I don't know what's wrong with people, man. You're sick in the head is what you are. Witness says, New Jersey man killed by police during traffic stop had hands up. Yeah, there's no gun. They just murdered him. Attorney for family police shot unarmed son execution style. This is a guy, another guy who was pulled over on the side of the road. A mother called the cops on her own son. Really? What do you think they're going to do? Save the day, lady? Come on. They pretend, oh, he had a knife. Oh, he was holding his girlfriend hostage and all of this. Total lie. They shot. They say, well, we couldn't see. Well, you couldn't see, so you assumed he was pointing a gun at you? You couldn't see, so you assumed he had a knife to the throat of this girl? You couldn't see, so you fired into a car where you claimed to believe he was holding an innocent hostage? But you fired into it not being able to see what you were shooting at? They kill the unarmed, innocent guy. That's what they did. Because this stupid idiot mother called the cops on her own son. Hey, lady, life isn't a TV show. This is America, a lawless, totalitarian police state where the cops could murder you, they could murder your little sister, they could murder your little baby, they can do whatever they want, and they'll never get in trouble, and they're all only looking for a chance to kill someone. This is a country where you are a damned fool if you are going to give the cops an opportunity to murder someone that you love. Oh, someone that I love is acting erratic. So come prepare for combat, please, you say to the 911 operator. And then she sends the lawless, unaccountable stormtroopers of death, already soaked in blood up to their chests, to come and what? Save your son? Save him? Is that what you think? Is that what happened on Law and Order? Is that what happened on That's not even what happened on Law and Order, right? They always show up after the fact, and then supposedly, you know, somehow magically solve the crime at the end every time. Oops. Here's a... Oh, he was a political kook, so you don't need to worry about him. A sovereign citizen tried to turn over a stray animal to the local pound. They wouldn't let him drop off the animal until he showed his ID. He refused to show his ID. So the cops came and they killed him.
I mean it. Go look at the Liberty Crier. They killed him. A guy who was dropping off a stray dog. I got 10 more I don't have time to get to. More soon. I mean, on the other side of this break. Stay tuned.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Well, I had Ramsey, then I lost him. Hang on.
Go back to Massachusetts, Pinko!
Oh, man.
Good old.
Sorry. I'm going to find a good quote for you guys here. Oh, good. Here's some John Hagee. This always makes for good filler. If it'll play.
I believe the Antichrist is alive and well. I believe he knows who he is. And I believe he awaits with glee his day of demonic reign. This man is at least going to be partially Jewish, as was Adolf Hitler, as was Karl Marx. He will not regard the desire of women. That means he's going to be homosexual.
There's an army of 200 million marching down the river Euphrates, coming toward the Persian Gulf. There's going to be the meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion that is unplanned for.
All right. I'm sorry to play that nonsense for you. I just think it's kind of funny. John Hagee of the Cornerstone Church there, Christians United for Israel.
Invasion from heaven, and he will establish his kingdom, and of his kingdom.
Oh, yeah, the Antichrist. He'll be a Jewish gay homosexual like Hitler. This is one of the most powerful forces in American politics. All right. Anyway, besides the point, though. Check it out. We got one of our guests today on the phone. That's good. It's Ramsey Baroud, and he's got this article. We're running it on antiwar.com. Oh, no, we ran it yesterday, which means I don't even have it in front of me. Rats. Hi, Ramsey. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing real good. You know, I'm reminded, sorry to start the interview this way. I'm reminded that, your telephone has a pretty lousy microphone on it, so I'll keep you turned up good and loud here, but I'll ask you to hold the telephone microphone away from your mouth pretty far if you could. We'll still be able to hear you fine, and hopefully, though, that'll cut down on the distortion there.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay. So, little technical note there. So, here we go. Time to move out. The problem with Mahmoud Abbas and his authority. So Mahmoud Abbas, that's, of course, the head of the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, or on the West Bank, I guess. And so I guess before we get all into your point about Abbas, and you got quite a few important ones, can you first of all just refresh us on the recent history, because there's a lot going on in Palestine politics here. Never mind the upcoming Israeli elections, but I mean in the politics of Palestine, particularly in regards to the international institutions, et cetera. So if you could just give us a quick refresher the last couple of weeks and what all is going on, then we'll have the context for your comments about Abbas.
Absolutely. In 2012, Palestine was admitted not as an observer with an observer status at the United Nations, but rather as an observing member, which means that they are qualified to apply for various international UN-related institutions, including the International Criminal Court. Mahmoud Abbas at the time was urged by many everywhere to please go ahead and apply. Mahmoud Abbas, get that membership, take Israeli alleged Israeli war criminals to court and have them be held accountable for the crimes committed in the Israeli war on Gaza in 2008-2009. Well, he didn't do so. Instead, John Kerry, Secretary
of State.
I'm sorry, Ramsey.
I'm sorry. I have to interrupt. Your phone is just so bad. Are you on any kind of headset or headphones or anything like that? Or is it just your plain handset?
Yeah, just a plain handset.
Okay. I'll ask you just hold. I can hear you good and loud. You have a good loud voice. So if you could just hold that thing as far away from your mouth as you can within reason,
That would really help, I think.
Again, and tell me if it's working out okay now.
That sounds perfect right there. That sounds just
okay,
fine.
Great.
Thank
great.
You.
No problem. So basically, Secretary of State John Kerry twisted Mahmoud Abbas's arm, told him, listen, dude, you've got to go back to negotiations with Israel. This whole ICC thing is not going to get you anything. We will choke you financially. We will not give you any money. We will, you know, take all of the political validations and support we give you, and you are going to find yourself isolated. Hamas is not going to be of any good, you know, is not going to be of any help to you. The U.S. is more important. Mahmoud Abbas indeed caved in and returned back to talks. There was an 8 months time frame that John Kerry imposed. Well, the time came and passed. Nothing has happened. The situation got a lot worse, and so forth and so on. And then another war was carried out by Israel last summer. And once more, Palestinians told Abbas, you've got to go to the ICC. You can be a member within the matter of 90 days from applying. Mahmoud Abbas still did not. That is until a couple of weeks ago. He goes back to the Security Council, and he asked them for a time frame for negotiations with Israel. Rightly, the man said, we can't negotiate forever and ever and ever. We've been negotiating for 20 years, and we got absolutely nothing, but we lost most of our land during the last 20 years. So we need a time frame. If Israel does not abide by the time frame, we need the international community to impose a solution, to intervene. He had a point there. The thing is, the resolution did not pass. And the U.S. vetoed the resolution anyway. So even if it passed, the U.S. was going to block it anyway. Mahmoud Abbas, it came across as if out of sheer frustration, decided, okay, that's it. We are going to go to the ICC, to the International Criminal Court. He signed the papers. And most likely Palestine will be admitted as a member on April 1st, which means that Palestine can legally sue Israel for war crimes. So that's really the context.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, as far as that goes, I forget now if it was your article or somewhere else I read this where they said that, you know, really all that would do is it would make Hamas susceptible to the International Criminal Court, but it wouldn't necessarily mandate that the ICC do anything about Israel, no matter what laws they break.
Right, right. And the issue is open for all sorts of interpretations and debates. Politicians and legal advisors are offering their two cents regarding the issue. But I think the conventional wisdom regarding this issue so far is this. Yes, Israel may refuse to allow any of its soldiers or war generals or politicians to stand for trial in front of the ICC. But the ICC does have the mandate to issue verdicts and to hold Israelis accountable and, in fact, sentence them, even if they are not standing in front of, which means that Israeli politicians and generals and military advisors and so on and so forth will find it extremely difficult to travel in countries, including European countries, that are members of the ICC or have ratified the ICC mandate. It's going to indeed create that sort of difficulty that Israel has never experienced in the past. So it will have that sort of impact, but of course there are no guarantees that anybody can be in prison as a result of it.
I'm sorry, Ramsey, I lost you there. Your phone cut out just after guarantees.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now, but your phone cut out there for just a second on the very end of that last sentence.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was at guarantees. I don't know if you remember exactly how it went.
That's right. There are no guarantees that an Israeli could, in fact, be tried and be sentenced and imprisoned, practically imprisoned,
right,
for committing war crimes in Gaza or elsewhere. But I would say that the move to the ICC is not a symbolic move. It's a real move, and it could have real consequences as far as Israel is concerned. And also, keep in mind, if the ICC confirms that the illegal settlements in the West Bank and Jerusalem constitute a war crime, it means that the European countries and the United States included will find it extremely difficult to do business with the settlement,
right,
because then they are going to be contributing to war crimes, or they were going to be empowering those who are committing
in other words,
crime.
This is all very powerful, symbolically at least. Now, I'm sorry, we have to hold it right here and take this break. It's Ramsey Baroud, y'all. We'll be right back in just a sec.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
Time to move out. The Problem with Mahmoud Abbas and His Authority by Ramsey Baroud. That's the piece at antiwar.com. His website is ramseybaroud.net, and he's also the editor of PalestineChronicle.com. His latest book is My Father Was a Freedom Fighter, Gaza's Untold Story. And so now, you do say in your, you said in this first segment here that it is very important that the Palestinian Authority is taking these steps towards statehood, basically any way they can, since obviously the American-backed Oslo process is nothing but a big joke and officially failed again as of last spring. And yet in the article you say the importance is not why Abbas is doing it. He's doing it because he's desperate for some importance himself. Is that right?
That's correct, Scott. And that is really that's the crux of the issue here. Because if Abbas is genuine and is really intended on creating a situation that is favorable to his people and to ultimately achieve sovereignty and independence and freedom, then, of course, there's absolutely no problem with this. But the issue here is that Mahmoud Abbas sits on the seat of, first, he has no mandate at all. His mandate expired in 2009. He has been renewing that democratic mandate among his friends in Ramallah, not going back to the Palestinian people, not holding any new elections. When a new government was elected, he actually did his very best to prevent them from operating. Half of the newly elected government is either killed or in prison. And Mahmoud Abbas has no political mandate. This is a man who's thinking creatively at the age of 80, with all due respect to people who are at 80, but at 8 years old, thinking creatively all for himself and trying to keep the balances. How do I stay in power? How do my cronies stay in power and stay rich and rich all the time using American money and the political mandate that is given by Israel? And at the same time, I need to throw a few crumbs to my people to give them the impression that I am doing something serious, that I'm actually making a difference in their life, that I'm not just sitting here and watching Israel build more settlements and kill more, you know, Gazans and so forth. No, I'm actually doing something proactive. For him, it's about winning time. It's about creating distractions, and it's about self-assertion, validations of Mahmoud Abbas himself as opposed to a national liberation project of his people. And that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, so, but what's the alternative? I mean, does he have junior, you know, people to him in the same organization who could do better? Or is the solution to just, I mean, because really the entire structure of the Palestinian Authority is, well, you correct me because I don't really know, but it seems to me, I believe it's sort of part of the structure of the Oslo Agreement, right? That the purpose of the PA is to implement Oslo, even though that thing's been dead in the water for 10 years or 20. And that without the Palestinian Authority there, then we get back to the plain truth of the matter, which is that the West Bank is Israeli-occupied territory, and they are responsible for the people on the West Bank. And it sounds like, you know, that may reflect reality, but that may be an even worse situation for the people of the West Bank if they go – If they don't even have the Palestinian Authority to stand between them and Israeli martial law at all. You know what I mean?
You're perfectly right, Scott. I wouldn't correct anything that you just said. That's exactly what is underway here. The Palestinian Authority is like an organization that was, you know, created by some bureaucracy for a specific reason. The reason doesn't exist anymore, but the organization needs to find a reason to carry on with its work so everybody can get paid at the end of the month. You know, the Palestinian Authority was supposed to be the temporary authority that takes Palestinians from the negotiation stage through a state building stage into finalizing the Oslo peace process and becoming an independent country at one point. The deadline on that, guess what, it was 2005. Okay, so that was a decade ago. Since then, the Palestinian Authority really had no purpose. They are paying bills. They are serving as Israel's kind of middleman. Lots of the dirty business that Israel's want to carry out, security coordinations, arresting Palestinian troublemakers, and so forth and so on, is being carried out by the Palestinian Authority. More importantly, the Palestinian Authority exists almost in violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. If you bear with me for like 30 seconds here. The Fourth Geneva Convention and other international conventions says the responsibility, the safety, the protection, and the welfare of an occupied nation, like the Palestinians, is the responsibility of the occupying power. Financially, Israel should be spending billions of dollars taking care of the Palestinians. That's the price of occupation, at least. Yet the money is actually not coming from Israel. Israel is benefiting from the money that's coming to sustain the occupation. The one who is running the whole scam is the Palestinian Authority. In the process, they are siphoning about 40% of all funds. So suddenly, you have these revolutionaries turned millionaires who are running all across the West Bank and Ramallah, operating massive five-star hotels, driving limousines, and so forth and so on. So it's a charade, and everybody is benefiting. Israel is the ultimate beneficiary, of course, because they are maintaining the occupation, not only at a very low cost, they are making lots of money from the settlement. The Palestinian Authority is making a lot of money, but within the accepted cronies of Mahmoud Abbas and the Fatah Party. The one who is actually suffering are the Palestinian people who do not have a mandated democratically elected leadership at the moment.
Right. Okay, well, so what's next for the poor Palestinians? Because it seems like, I mean, there's an optimistic, I guess, way to look at it, where I guess if the Israelis are forced for all intents and purposes to just admit that they have stolen the West Bank and that they are officially annexing it, or that it is already de facto annexed, all the land between the Jordan and the Mediterranean, then at that point, the Palestinians can, you know, pull a South Africa and just shame the minority Jewish government into allowing them one man, one vote for, you know, the new binational state or something like that. On the other hand, it seems like much more likely to me would be an American-backed Nakba 2, where the Israelis say, fine, if we can't slowly steal the West Bank, we'll just push all y'all into the Jordan River and hope you can swim, or maybe round them all up and put them on trains to the Gaza Strip concentration camp and keep them there. If they're pushed up against the wall, won't they do anything to maintain a supermajority Jewish state there? To hell with democracy? Oh, did I lose him? I lose you?
No, oh. I'm still here.
Yeah, so that was the question. You know, what do you think that, you know, if there's the fall of the Palestinian Authority, does that mean that it is a de facto single state? And then here, I'm going to dump that music down. Does that mean it's a single state? And would that mean a next Nakba? And in fact, let me go ahead and ask you this. Can I hold you over to the next segment? And we'll do one more segment today, and then I can ask you about France, too?
Absolutely.
Would that be okay? Okay, great. It's Ramzi Baroud, y'all. He's at antiwar.com. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
Hey, Al Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all. QR Silver Commodity Discs. The first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.
All right, you guys, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm on with Ramsey Baroud from PalestineChronicle.com. And we're talking about the perpetual crisis on the west bank of the Jordan River there in occupied Palestine. Well, in Gaza and East Jerusalem, too. I don't mean to exclude all that. I guess East Jerusalem counts as the West Bank. Anyway, so, Ramsey, where we were at was I was musing about how what an intractable situation. What the hell is going to happen here? I totally sympathize with the let's have a one-state solution where it doesn't matter what your religion or ethnicity is or any of that because it's a, you know, extremely limited constitutional republic where the government's only job is protecting people's rights, and so it doesn't matter who's in charge of it. And yet, what kind of pipe dream is that? Isn't it much more likely that if the two-state solution is abandoned, not that it's, as we discussed, not that anybody's making any real progress, but that if it's outright abandoned and it becomes sort of goes without saying that, okay, so-called Judea and Samaria now have been annexed by the Israelis, and then there's that fight for the Palestinians for their, at that point, majority rights, then won't that just lead to a whole other war, in which case the Palestinians are overmatched 10,000 to 1 by the American-backed Israeli army?
Right. I don't see a way around it. I think effectively, since 1967, when Israel occupied the rest of historic Palestine, the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip, more or less, this land has been shared. It has been shared, though, under different kind of legal system. So they are all really living there. I mean, the Israeli settlers start moving into the West Bank only months, really, after the West Bank was occupied. And in the early 1970s, you had major settlements flourishing, and you had tens of thousands of Israeli Jews who were being brought to the West Bank in violation of international law. But the fact is, now we are looking at over 500,000 Israeli Jews who are living in the West Bank and occupied East Jerusalem. And you are looking at over 4 million Palestinians living in that land itself. Don't forget that you have nearly 2 million Palestinian Arabs living as Israeli citizens, yes, second-class citizens, but still citizens nonetheless of the State of Israel. Water is already shared. Israel gets third of its water from the aquifers of the West Bank, and so forth and so on. So the fact is that land has been shared for a long time. But the issue is it has been shared under a system in which Israel is oppressing the Palestinians. What is the harm of redefining these issues where both of them could share that land based on equal rights like in any other progressive democracy in the world, as opposed to trying to split land that is just really impossible to divide at this stage.
Right. Well, I guess it did work eventually in South Africa, and it seems I know that there have been a lot of Palestinians for a very long time have said, "Hey, give us one man, one vote," because they can see through the charade of the two-state solution as you describe it. It's just a mechanism for helping the Israelis accomplish their so-called facts on the ground there, as they do. And so, you know, but I guess the question, though, really is if every Palestinian said one man, one vote, would American TV ever explain it? And would that even change anything, you know?
It is sad. It is incredibly sad how American media continue to look the other way. I mean, even during the height of the latest Gaza war, the numbers did not change much as far as sympathies and understanding of the conflict, because the media continue to just, you know, instill this ignorant narrative of the situation in Palestine and Israel. And as a result, the U.S. audience remain kind of almost completely outside the realm of reality in terms of understanding this. So it's not Americans who deserve to be blamed, but the media that continue to misrepresent the conflict purposely, siding with Israel against the Palestinians, and the result is we are so far removed in our understanding from that conflict, not just in Palestine, Israel, frankly, but the rest of the Middle East.
All right. Well, now, so let me ask you about France and Islam and free speech and everything in 3 minutes. What do you think?
Sure, let's try that.
Go right ahead. What's your reaction to the situation in France? I'll make it as general as I can.
Well, of course, I mean, number one, the magazine that was hit, you know, I have particular sympathy. I do not respect the pornographic and tasteless art, but that's another issue. I think politically, they've been really quite progressive, and they've been kind of more or less kind of equal in attacking and criticizing everyone else. I don't think, though, that this is about art or about freedom of expression or about tolerance or lack thereof. It's not a religious issue. It's an entirely political issue. France has, since the years of François Mitterrand and Jacques Chirac, until, a few years earlier when Sarkozy and Hollande came to power, France changed its politics entirely regarding the Middle East. They were anti-Iraq war. They became pro-intervention. They led the war on Libya. They led a war on Mali. And now they are playing a very destructive role in Syria. And as a result, when you support various militant groups that stay in Libya that are affiliated with Al-Qaeda, in order for you to achieve political ends in this country or that country, don't be surprised when there is a blowback. And when the war that you have been exporting to everybody else's country hits you back at home. This is a political issue, and I think that's where the sad reality is, that this is being discussed within the context of religion and freedom of expression, and if people just understand, this has very little to do with religion and everything to do with interventionalism and with politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Juan Cole is saying, hey, listen, presuming this is an Al-Qaeda attack or Al-Qaeda-inspired attack, which it sure looks like with these guys being veterans of the Syrian war and all, that the action is in the reaction. This is a tactic in a war, and they're trying to divide white Christian French from brown Muslim French, and they're trying to make matters worse for their own purposes. So don't fall for it. And everybody's
exactly
falling for
right.
it. Oh, the Islamics, they just hate free speech so much. You know how they are.
That's right. And, you know, one thing that needs to be mentioned, that one of the first police officers who were killed in the attack is by the name of Ahmad. Now, this is a Muslim police officer who died defending the freedom of expression for a man who has been insulting the Islamic faith for years and years. And
right.
made
I'm sorry, back off,
that, of
back off your microphone one more time for me. Sorry to interrupt, but I'd rather have you quoted well.
Right. What I was saying is that one of the victims is a Muslim by the name of Ahmad, a police officer who was killed defending the very the right for that magazine to convey the kind of information that had been really rather insulting and pornographic and demeaning to every Islamic symbol there is. And I think that also needs to be mentioned, that this is ultimately not about religion and freedom of expression. If we really need to understand the roots of that conflict, let's talk about Libya, Mali, Syria, and so forth. And this is what the French media is particularly trying to avoid.
Right. Well, and of course, if you really do want to talk about, an enlightenment, reformation, and freedom of speech and freedom of religion in Muslim countries, that's a difficult argument to have in the middle of a decade and a half long war of radicalization of the entire region. If you can call it any one thing, it's that. So it's if this was September 10th and we were saying, hey, you know, we ought to have a real discussion about individual rights over in the Middle East, that would be entirely different than after Bush and Obama have set the entire place on fire and turned it upside down and made these kooks seem like they're prescient, you know?
Absolutely. Yet somehow, Scott, again, every single time such things happen, we look at this with absolutely no context. One of the top CIA people said yesterday, I think it was in the New York Times, he said, this is the worst attack that we have seen in Europe since the attack on the London Underground in July 7th, which is really not true. I mean, remember that crazy Norwegian guy who went and killed 77 people and so much else that happened with hate crimes and Nazi, neo-Nazi crime and all of that. Right. Again, they are so extremely selective in the way they present history because for them there has to be a political price. And the price most likely, as far as France is concerned, is most likely to be seen in Libya, and it's going to be sooner than later.
Right. Well, and part of it, too, is because they picked as their target this time this group of cartoonists and journalists, then that means that cartoonists and journalists as a self-identified group worldwide can only see it out of their own eyes as the target, that what they are and what they do it is the end all of the story because they're writing their own story. And so they can't see it from the outside the way that you just say that this doesn't take place in a vacuum. When these guys tried to go and fight in Iraq in 2005, they told the court because they were upset about the pictures of the torture at the Abu Ghraib prison. When, as you mentioned, they went and fought in Syria and have come back. And this is the kind of thing that I'm pretty sure you, but I know I've been warning for years, is going to be the guaranteed consequence of the Western powers supporting the Sunni-based insurgency that was the enemy in the Iraq war against the Shiite side in Syria, was these guys are going to come home. You see Europeans and Americans, too, going to Syria to fight. They're going to come home. And then what's been their tactic since last century? Try to bait the Western powers into occupying their countries, radicalizing more generations, destabilize more sectarian or secular military type dictatorships or oil potentate dictatorships in the region, etc. To Al Qaeda, this is a long war, and we keep helping them make it that way. As long as we're going over time, I figured I'd rant at you for a minute there. But anyway. It's just sad to see that, the especially like I'm following all these journalists on Twitter, and to them, this is only and completely about cartoons and about journalism and about, the pen versus the sword and this kind of thing. It's the only frame that they can see it in.
It really is. I mean, if this happened years and years ago, I can understand because there is not much context in which we can draw from. But this happened just weeks after the CIA torture reports, for crying out loud. It happened a couple of weeks after Seymour Hersh said that dogs have been used to rape prisoners in Afghanistan. It happened after all these horrible things, and yet not one single mention in mainstream media of any of these issues. And if you do bring it up, then you are provocateur, and you are, you're just out of your mind of why would you be so sensitive to bring this up. Another thing is these guys claim to be affiliated with Al-Qaeda in Yemen. On that very day, 37 people were killed in Yemen as a result of attacks by Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Very little of this was even mentioned in the media. 37 people, nobody stood in solidarity, no hashtags, not my name is Muhammad, my name is this or that, because again, they are less important and less relevant, and their death is not going to serve any political purpose.
Right, yeah, exactly. They might as well, the targets, the victims might as well have all been Al-Qaeda themselves for as much as Americans or Western media interests care, or for that matter, our populations really too. But I'm sorry, I've kept you so long today on the show, but thank you so much for coming back on, Ramsey. It's great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Scott.
I really appreciate it. All right, y'all, we'll be right back. Just a sec. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott. This is my show. Well, we went into the break there. I really like talking with Ramsey Baroud. I got to get that guy a new phone. That should be one of my projects. We need a Kickstarter for buy Scott a stack of boxes of phones that he can then send to his regular guests who have bad phones. Doesn't that sound like a worthwhile project? We'll find, we'll do tests and we'll find which model has a really good damn microphone on it. And then we'll get one to Daniel Ellsberg and we'll get one to Gareth Porter. And, well, Gareth, we've been talking on Skype lately, so that works a bit better. Definitely Ramsey Baroud needs a new telephone. I have to email him about that. You gotta change handsets. All right. Yeah, man. So I saw Michael Hayden say, oh, yeah, I guess you don't mind NSA spying so much now after this attack in France, huh? What? Yeah, because I'm so terrified now that I stopped thinking entirely. I was completely unable to think of the rest of your sentence. Like, yeah, because you succeeded in stopping the attack with all your NSA spying, right? Isn't that the story of what happened in France the other day? Two guys and their buddy, the two brothers and their buddy, they were about to kill some people, but because the NSA provided quick actionable intelligence to the cops in time, they saved the day, right? Oh, no? Oh, I know what he was going to say. He was going to say, because if only we had been data mining your mom's email, then we could have stopped the attack in France. When, of course, there's nobody for 100 miles I don't know about in the American embassy in Paris or whatever. But otherwise, there's no one around who is not subject to Executive Order 12333 in the nation state of France, dude. What are we even talking about here? How does he even think that that's a compelling argument other than, well, I guess at Fox News, they never have to explain what they mean. They just say it and you just are supposed to accept it. It seems to me like the banner headline could be NSA fails to prevent another one. Maybe they should all be drowned in the sea because we just don't need them. Well, maybe they should all be furloughed and given a paid vacation like a cop who just murdered a 12-year-old boy. We should just give them all paid vacations. That's Lou Rockwell's idea. Lou Rockwell says, hey, I say pay them. I may be changing it a little bit here. It's been a little while. But I think he says something like, I don't care. Pay them $1 million a year to go on vacation to Bermuda. The entire national government, each and every one of them. The government is shut down, but don't cry. You still get paid, federal pigs. Here's $1 million. Just go swimming. For God's sake, just leave us alone. Yeah, I'd go for that. It would still, I mean, look, they got a $4 trillion a year budget, right? I mean, come on. They can afford that. We can afford that. Well, you can. All right, anyway. And so now, listen, back to the cop. So there was another one yesterday where the cop was there. This family invited the state to get involved in their personal dispute. And apparently, the way they claimed it was the husband called the cops to protect him from his wife as she was moving out and getting her stuff or something along those lines. At some point, the German Shepherd growled. So the cop tried to shoot the German Shepherd, but then, oops, he tripped over whatever was behind him, like some sitcom, and he shot the lady. He was trying to murder her pet dog. Instead, he shot and killed her in front of her husband. I hope he's happy for calling the government to settle his personal problems. And in front of her daughters, I'm certain that they are not happy. And of course, the cop will be suspended for 2 weeks with pay and will get away with it scot-free. There is no criminally negligent homicide if you're a cop. They have sovereign immunity, like the King of England. They can do whatever they want. Or like the King of Bahrain. They can do whatever they want. And in this case, they can be a no-good, worthless piece of crap who accidentally shot some lady to death. And there will be, say it with me now, no accountability whatsoever. and we all already know it. Hey, cool, at the Liberty Crier they got U.S. has more jails than colleges. Here's a map of where all the prisoners live. How do you like that? 2.2 million. 2.2 million people. And I know million sounds like a singular word. It's not that much. But go ahead and write out 999,999. And that's just 1 million. One short of 1 million. Now, write that out twice and imagine each of them nines representing nine ones. And each of those ones representing a real person. Locked in a cage like an animal because why? Because the government said so. Oh, I'm sure that's good enough. Oh, yeah, no, we no longer need to presume them innocent as long as they've been through the court system. Right, everybody? Ha, 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 ha. 7 million people if you count everybody sitting in the county jail. 2 million, 2.2 million, those are just the people in the penitentiary. You count the people sitting in county jail, all the people on probation or on parole, you're talking 7 million Americans under the thumb of the American police state, already guilty until proven innocent all day, every day. More prisons than colleges now. You would think these genius professors could figure out a way to get a little bit more share of the money. Don't you guys study criminology? Can't you recommend a larger portion of the budget for yourselves, you stupid idiots? Can't you recommend that incarcerating us all isn't the best way to keep your profit margin up from those exorbitant government-subsidized tuition rates you charge? But I guess if you were smart enough to have a real job, you wouldn't be teaching college, would you? FBI says search warrants not needed to use stingrays in public places. Yeah, of course. Stingray, that is where they pose. They have a box that pretends to be your cell phone tower. And then they got you. And they just drive around. And they give them away to local police all the time. There's even cases of cops who decided to drop charges rather than admit to the judge what they'd been doing with this damn stingray. Here are cops who locked this lady to a restraint chair, cut all her hair off, stomped on her head, and then they got fired, but they got rehired, and with all back pay. Because they're cops, and there is no accountability, and they can do whatever they want. Here's one at the Institute for Justice. IJ, the Coctopus. Good guys. Forfeiting Justice, a new study. How Texas police and prosecutors cash in on seized property, and all they do is buy more equipment for themselves and pad their gigantic overtime salaries with the money that they steal. They're nothing more than simple thieves. Just like there's another one, this one's in the Atlantic today, about how in Florida they're just straight entrapping guys into these child sex stings where they're chatting with an adult. And they go, yeah, okay, I'm an adult, and you're an adult, and I'm coming to meet you. And then they have the adult say, I have a sister, and she is 16. Yeah, so what? Okay, so I'll see you later. And then they go, ah, you are going to see the 16-year-old to have sex with the 16-year-old. Go read it. You won't even believe me. Go read how just the complete absurd entrapments of wholly, wholly innocent and wholly entrapped men. Not even that, well, they went for it and ended up making a date with a minor. No, they didn't. They were simply entrapped by the cops who lied. And they did it, why? Because when it's a sex crime against a kid, guess what? The cops get to steal all their property before they're ever, without even charging them, certainly before they're ever convicted of anything. And so for the cops, this is just how we make money. We entrap innocent men, lonely men who say, I'm looking for love in an 18 years old and older chat room. Hi, I am only interested in full grown women. Are you a full grown woman? Oh, good. Maybe we can go on a date. He shows up. They put handcuffs on him and they just lie. It's right there in the Atlantic. Read it. And they're talking local news coverage. It was a local news station said, man, you guys got a lot of sex criminals in the neighborhood who keep falling for the same thing. So they looked into it. And then they said, oh, I get it. The cops are the criminals. They're simply guilty of grand theft. That's it. They're thieves. They're thieves operating under the color of law.
Because when they accuse someone, they can steal the property under the theory that they're accusing the property of committing a crime. And property is not a person, and so it doesn't have the right to be considered innocent till proven guilty. And it doesn't have a burden of proof that favors it, so the cops can just take it. And, you know, this is actually the issue. I should talk about it more, civil forfeiture, because this is the issue that I know wakes up Americans to the police state that they live in. I've seen it happen for 25 years straight, including myself. What? They can do that? Yeah, they can do that, and they do, and it's wrong. And this ain't America no more. See you tomorrow.